Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. We are eager to offer amazingly competitive prices, plus an additional $1,000 Costco discount on all new Cherry Hill Volvos. When leasing or purchasing a new or certified Cherry Hill Volvo, you become a valued part of our team. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo. Our team thanks you for downloading the Rich Zeoli podcast. Relationships matter to all of us. At Cherry Hill Volvo, we will work to gain your trust, your confidence, and in turn, develop a relationship with you, the Rich Zeoli listener.
Now, 60 minutes of nonstop talk on the Rich Zeoli podcast.
All right, the Secretary of Energy will be here a little bit later in the show, and a bar owner who's fed up with the fact that the city and the state never gave him any notice before he had to close. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. The Zeoli Show on Twitter, at Rich Zeoli, Facebook.com/Zeoli Show, where you can weigh in on all things throughout the show, and we'll read some of those comments on the air for you as well. Today's a great day for you to call the show and weigh in on how you're doing, how you're holding up, how you're getting through this, by the way, and what's going on. Some of the questions that I've been asked, by the way, and I'm always trying to give answers to some of those questions are, what are the powers the government has during a pandemic like this? Because look, at the end of the day, you know, we hear all these rumors about lockdowns and military quarantines and shelter in place. Could that happen in our area? Sure, it could. What does it mean? Damon Root over at Reason.com did a very, very good job of looking into this from the federal and state level. Police powers during a pandemic, constitutional but not unlimited. State and local governments are currently taking dramatic and sometimes unprecedented action in response to the pandemic, including shelter-in-place orders, bans on public gatherings, and business shutdowns. What's the legal basis for such sweeping actions? In the U.S. constitutional system, each state possesses a traditional authority to regulate in the name of public health, safety, and welfare. These are known as police powers. This authority has deep roots in the Anglo-American law. Basically, what I'll say is that people think the federal government is the police power, and that's not true. That's only in the movies. In real life, the state has the police power. The federal government, created by the states, was only there to deal with the border and to deal with international issues. There's a American legal theorist, Thomas Cooley, who wrote a treatise on the constitutional limitations, which rest upon the legislative power of the states of the American Union, who said the police powers of a state embraces its system of internal regulation by which it is sought not only to preserve the public order and to prevent offenses against the state, but also to establish for the intercourse of citizen with citizen those rules of good manners and good neighborhood which are calculated to prevent a conflict of rights and to ensure to each the uninterrupted enjoyment of his own rights, so far as is reasonably consistent with a like enjoyment of rights by others. What does that mean? When your rights start to affect somebody else's rights is where this power kind of kicks in. One example of the police powers put to appropriate use would be quarantine regulations and related measures designed to protect the public from persons or property infected with disease or otherwise dangerous. Now, the United States Supreme Court, in a decision Gibbons v. Ogden of 1824, Chief Justice John Marshall ruling that police powers, the immense mass of legislation which embraces everything within the territory of a state, not surrendered to the federal government, includes quarantine laws and health laws of every description. But police powers are not a blank check. The state may not absolutely do anything it wants simply by invoking public health or safety. Here's a framework for weighing the constitutionality of purported health or safety laws, regulations, and orders. The goal of this framework is to prevent or curtail the illegitimate use of a state's otherwise lawful police powers. So, assuming that our area, for example, because you've heard the rumors, Bill de Blasio in New York wants to do a shelter-in-place order, which means you can't leave your house. There's been talk of a lockdown in New Jersey where you can't leave the state of New Jersey. There are some counties that are not letting non-residents go through their counties in other parts of the country. Could it happen here? Sure it could. The first question to ask, he writes, is whether the law, regulation, or order serves a genuine public health or safety purpose. Plenty of regulations would pass muster, but some would not. For instance, is public health or safety advanced in any way when a state requires a would-be interior designer to spend time and money obtaining a state-issued occupational license? Of course not. By contrast, is the public made safer when a confirmed COVID-19 patient is quarantined until a doctor gives that person the all clear to return to normal life? The answer would seem yes. The next question to ask is whether the law, the regulation, or order is the least restrictive means available for the state to pursue its legitimate public health or safety objective. Once again, quarantining a confirmed COVID-19 patient would seem to fit the bill. Other severe measures that similarly burden civil liberties might not. The details matter. Another key question to ask is whether a temporary measure has exceeded its shelf life. An emergency measure that was perfectly justifiable yesterday may become constitutionally suspect tomorrow. Things change, and it is paramount to return to a normal footing as soon as the crisis has lessened or passed. To be sure, there will be hard cases, and this framework does not provide all the answers. We are likely to be arguing about the wisdom and legality of many government responses to COVID-19 for many years to come. So it does not hurt to remember that a state's police powers are not unlimited, even amid a pandemic. That is important to remember. I've been getting asked the question, when will the bars and restaurants reopen? We don't know when they'll reopen. But my hope is that we'll get through this over the next couple weeks. We'll find the virus has not spread because we did our job, and then life can begin to resume to normal. But you look at what's happening in Italy, where they've got checkpoints. They've got people ordered to stay in their homes. Some people have suggested that really the only thing we could have done to stop the spread of this virus would have been back in January to shut the border completely and order every American to just stay inside. But, you know, that was never going to happen. There's no way that could have happened. It's not realistic. Now, on the international level, because all this affects us on the local level and the national level, and it all comes down to the question of the international level. And you're hearing a lot about the politics of this. And we'll talk more about China in the days to come. Why I think it's important to keep calling it the China virus is not because I'm racist. It's not because I hate the Chinese people. It's not because I hate Chinese food. We have to remember this for the history of it. And we have to remember as well that there are issues among the food supply that we need to address. Now, Senator John Cornyn of Texas is getting a lot of grief over what he said regarding some of the things that people eat in certain parts of the world. Take a listen.
Are you on board with the present context of China virus, Chinese virus? Does it seem like that's helpful right now to call it that?
That's where it came from.
But is it helpful? It alienates people? It sort of sends like tones like this, there's someone to blame, that there is a group of people to blame.
Well, I think China is to blame because the culture where people eat bats and snakes and dogs and things like that, these viruses are transmitted from the animal to the people, and that's why China has been the source of a lot of these viruses like SARS, like MERS, the swine flu, and now the coronavirus. So I think they have a fundamental problem, and I don't object to geographically identifying where it's coming from.
And then it's connected to Asian Americans. The Asian Americans are feeling like it is a racist thing.
Oh, I disagree. I don't think we're not talking about Asians. We're talking about China, where these viruses emanate from and which are created this pandemic.
And that's a key point, right? I mean, we're not blaming Asian American people for this virus. We're talking about a country, not a people, a country. And that's the difference, right? So bats, they're Vox, V-O-X. Vox is a website, not exactly a conservative site. And I'm being very generous by that. I mean, Greg, you would say it's more on the liberal side, would you not?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's, yeah. Ezra Klein is the, you know, he's the founder of it. And, you know, he's not exactly, he's a regular guest on MSNBC.
By the way, when Ozzy Osbourne used to rip the heads off bats,
he
was
did.
That real?
Well, he did it. He did it one time because he thought it was somebody had thrown a bat up on stage and he thought it was a rubber bat. So he, you know, he was coked out of his mind and he, you know, ripped it the head off the bat. And
well, who among us hasn't done that when we're coked out of our minds? Come on.
Thinking it was not real, and it actually was real. So yes, he did that. He also bit the head off a dove too. So
ew. Look at all of his health problems. So well, I'm just saying.
That's true. Yeah.
Not the drugs, it's the bats and the doves.
Why would you eat a dove?
Well, he did it to be shocking at a record release party. Hmm. They release these doves, and he
is that why Prince did the song When Doves Cry?
he was talking about Ozzy. Yeah.
He was talking about Ozzy.
Yeah.
So Vox, the not conservative site Vox, had a piece a couple weeks ago, and actually last month, the coronavirus likely started in a bat. This is not the bat's fault. The disease expert explains where the coronavirus likely comes from. The outbreak, which at the time was still basically in China at the time that they wrote this, has to do with a couple of other things. There's an illegal pangolin trade, which may be implicated. I'll talk more about that as well. But the virus is thought to have started in a food market in Wuhan, China. And trying to understand which animals were involved in the outbreak, Jonathan Epstein is a veterinarian and epidemiologist with the EcoHealth Alliance, who was involved in tracking down the animal source for the SARS outbreak. He outlined what's known about the source of the new outbreak, the challenges of preventing outbreaks, and why zoonotic diseases, which are diseases that pass between humans and animals, is a two-way street. Animals can infect humans, and humans can infect animals right back. It's important to track down the animal reservoirs of disease, because we have to obviously figure out what we shouldn't be eating anymore, which is a big part of this. And bats are one of those things where they're saying now, you know, this is kind of the thing. SARS emerged in 2003. It was in a live market in southern China in the Guangdong area. It turned out people that were handling and trading cats had a higher incidence of exposure and infection to the virus. Then they tested animals within the markets, and civets, cats, were found to be infected with the same virus that was infecting people. So the assumption was made that people were getting it from cats, and cats were very promptly and publicly removed from the markets and stamped out. But a very important study came out a few months after the epidemic looking at cats on farms that supplied the live animal markets. And it turned out that none of the cats that were being farmed had any evidence of exposure or infection to SARS to SARS coronavirus. It was important because this was not a virus that was getting into the markets. These civets, these cats are not house cats, but they were getting infected in the markets themselves, just like people. So what was giving them the SARS coronavirus? Was it bats? And this is what they found. The horseshoe bat specifically, there's a whole group, a whole diversity of viruses related to SARS that are circulating in horseshoe bats. One of the viruses they identified with our partners at the Wuhan Institute of Virology back in 2013 is 96% similar to this strain of the coronavirus, which gives us confidence that this new coronavirus also is a bat virus originally. These bats are hunted and eaten in China, and in fact were brought into the markets in the case of SARS, and that is how other animals, including people, were affected. The epidemiologist who spoke to Vox, the not political Vox, said this: the epidemiology, the investigation of the earliest cases, the first 41 cases of pneumonia, found that just over half of them had contact or exposure to the market. Some of them worked in the market. Others had visited the market. There were other cases that had no contact with the market, and that simply suggested they may have been exposed either to other people that were sick or to animals that were sick, perhaps somewhere else besides that market. It's clear there was some environmental contamination in the market that includes this virus, and that's what we know so far. So it's likely that people were infected in the market, but I think there's still some question about how the earlier cases may have been exposed. Now, the other thing too is this is the bat virus could have also coexisted between the bats and another animal. This, Pangolin. What the hell's a pangolin anyway, by the way?
It's... is that, that's the one that's this scaly sort of anteater looking thing.
He's a scary looking dude.
Yeah. But they eat the scales.
I mean, he looks like a little shriveled up, like he's got like armor on his body.
Yes. So we were talking to my kids about this, we were like bats and the mongoose like animal that's the civet, and then all these different animals that people are eating that cause these things. And so they were like, so basically don't eat Curious George, Ricky Dicky Tavi, or Bartok Anastasia, and you'll be fine. Like, just, you know, they put it to the kids, you know.
Totally.
Characters.
It's a great way for your teenage boys to put it.
Don't eat Ricky Tikki Tavi.
I would have expected that to come from my 5-year-old son. Yes. No, I think it's no, good for them. I mean, that's a great way to put it. No,
they were being funny. Obviously.
I know they were, and that's good, and that's a good way to put it because I didn't even know that that was an ant-eating animal. This pangolin.
Yeah, it is scary, but I guess the scales are considered like sacred and might help with fertility, or I don't know. There are some, you know.
These little animals, they're imported in huge numbers to Chinese markets for food and for medicine. In fact, the market for pangolins is so large, they are said to be the most trafficked mammals on the planet. All four Asian species are critically endangered. This is from the New York Times. And it's far from clear whether being identified as a viral host will be good or bad for pangolins. It could decrease the trade in the animals or cause a backlash. It is also far from clear whether the pangolin is the animal that passed the virus to humans. Bats are still thought to be the original host of the virus. If pangolins were involved in disease transmission, they would act as an intermediate host. The science so far is suggestive rather than conclusive, and because of the intense interest in the virus, some claims have been made public before the traditional scientific review process. But the whole idea is that diseases that spill over from animals to humans, and this is where we are with this right now. And the problem is, and the reason why, again, it's important to talk about China, not because we hate Chinese people or we hate Chinese food or we hate the nation of China, is because, unfortunately, in their culture, they eat a lot of this stuff. And this is where these viruses are coming from. So it's either one of two things. It's either made in a lab, in which case China was trying to unleash a bioweapon on us, but you can't say that because the idea of that is also politically incorrect. Or it came from these disgusting eating habits from people in these markets in places in China where they eat bats and they eat these pangolins. And then you have to have a conversation about that. And we got to do maybe some sort of a campaign in China, like stop eating freaking bats.
I mean, I can get behind that, right?
Can we just get behind that?
Yes, please.
But they should do anime. They should do it through kids cartooning or whatever, do anime so that they get the kids to shame the parents.
Yeah, they do like anime. And
they love anime. Yeah. Yeah, they love that.
China, stop eating freaking bats.
Yeah. It's not that hard, right?
Right. It's not that hard. Yeah. See a bat? Don't eat it.
Well, what are bats? Are they like chicken wings?
Yeah.
What do they fry them up or what do you...
I don't know. It's the horseshoe bat. So I guess, yeah, probably, right? They probably have a bigger wingspan than the other bats.
Yeah. Yuck.
Disgusting.
And like, bats carry rabies. Like, they're just, I don't know. It's just, ugh.
I mean, we love bats here. We just don't want to freaking eat them.
No.
Right? Yeah, we love to watch and let them eat mosquitoes, but we don't need them eating, like, we don't need to eat bats.
Yeah, but we eat cows. And like, I don't want to judge another culture. I'm just saying if it's bad for you and it carries something, you know, stop eating it.
Yeah, we
or
eat cows.
Put it in the deep fryer.
We eat cows and they eat cows, right? We could all agree cows don't typically, with the exception of the mad cow disease, which was a contained thing, cows don't typically cause these viruses. But bats have been linked to this SARS now. And so the question really becomes, how many more viruses are we going to let the world unleash until we launch the following campaign? Hey, China, stop eating freaking bats.
Or put them in it. They need some deep fryers. They need to deep fry them to kill the...
Well, I bet you what it comes to, I bet you it's not the eating of the bat. I bet you it's the handling of the bat.
100% because those open, you know, those markets are unregulated. So they're, right. you know, who knows what's going on in those markets. And that's what happens with a, you know, a communist government.
You drop a bat in a deep fryer, put a little buffalo chicken wing sauce on it. You're not going to get the SARS virus.
Spicy bat wings.
Spicy. Yeah. Give me a thermonuclear on my bat wings. But the problem is the handling of the bat is where the virus is probably transmitted from bat to human. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or the little weird looking freaking aardvark thing. You know what I mean? The pangolin.
Yeah. Just like a delicacy. Oh,
so God. Here's my other campaign. Hey, China, stop eating freaking pangolins.
That's the Jersey in you.
Yes.
It just seems very simple.
It does.
Right?
It 100% does. Like, this whole thing could have been avoided if that one person didn't eat a bat.
Yeah.
Did like, honestly.
Market and go, let me measure this bat. Oh, look at it. Nice, meaty. Yeah, nice, meaty bat with my bare hands. Let me take this and I'll carry it home and then I'll shake hands and I'll touch everything. And the next thing you know, the world is dealing with a global pandemic.
Or is it just because they didn't wear gloves, to the bare hands point?
Yeah, I mean, that's also a big part of it. The problem, again, with the gloves, though, is it's a false sense of security. You wear the gloves, if you still touch your face, the gloves don't stop that from happening,
you know?
I think sometimes people think that. They're like, oh, I've got gloves on. I can pick my nose. No, you're still letting germs in your body. you know?
You know what they need? Just like we have the, you know, by all the faucets in the building, we have like songs. So they should have like, you know, different music, how to cook the bat and clean your hands and clean up. What song would you play to that for proper cleanliness?
John cooks the bat. John cooks the bat. I hold the Dario. John cooks the bat.
You are quick, dude.
He is so quick.
I'm trying to come up with a song. I got to do lesson plans for the kids. Today's lesson, today's homeschooling lesson, why we don't eat freaking bats.
The soundtrack of that can be Bat Outta Hell by Meatloaf.
Oh, I love
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
You guys
so again,
awesome.
I mean, trying to understand this doesn't make us racist for trying to understand this. We're trying to understand this. If in America we were all eating, I don't know, if cauliflower was causing a worldwide pandemic, I would hope we'd stop eating freaking cauliflower, right? And if our cauliflower eating habits in America, because now everything is cauliflower. Cauliflower pizza, cauliflower mashed potatoes, cauliflower give it a rest already. You see that? Cauliflower mashed potatoes. How does cauliflower identify as a potato?
It's actually really good, dude.
No, it's not.
No, it 100%.
I'd rather eat a bat mashed potato. Is what I'd rather eat.
It can be a little hard, but it's a nice substitute.
You know what else could be hard? Bat.
No plan.
Hey, but seriously, if we found out that our cauliflower issue is causing worldwide pandemics, would it not be appropriate for the world to say, hey, America, stop eating cauliflower?
Yes.
Give it up with the cauliflower crust already. 100%. Make a real freaking pizza crust. Wow.
I mean, come on.
I'm just saying. Yes. I'm just making that as a comparison.
If that was causing a worldwide pandemic, then yes, you 100% could say that.
And would that be racist if the world said this is an American virus because of their cauliflower eating habits?
Yes.
Yes, it would be very, very racist. Very true. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Again, those are two very conservative sites, the New York Times and Vox.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
Now, you see, I knew that it would be only a matter of time until some vegan texted me with some nonsense. So here it goes. Smoking gives us cancer, and we do that. True to ourselves. Red meat and cheese cause heart disease. True to ourselves. If red meat and cheese caused heart disease, which was contagious, I would say your point is valid. But it's not contagious now, is it? No, it's not. Now, maybe you could argue secondhand smoke hurts other people. Fine. Then I don't believe that, but say it's true because there's mixed studies on that. But I know Dawn certainly believes that. So then what we do is we don't allow people to smoke around other people. Problem solved. But you can't compare eating cheese and meat, which causes heart disease, to an individual after an individual's made personal choices, to eating something that causes a disease that is contagious and can unleash a worldwide pandemic. It's not the same thing. It's just simply not the same thing. It's not even the same ballpark.
Well, how
Man,
many?
It ain't even the same ball game. What's that?
Well, how many people die of heart disease and all these things from unhealthy habits? And we pretty much are going to socialized health care, so we all pay for it. And then it's in your DNA, so your children inherit that. So they do have a point.
No, they have no point. It's not contagious. Well, I can't give you cholesterol. I can't give you high cholesterol.
You can give your child. It goes through your DNA.
Oh, I don't know about that. But I mean, but from person to person, adult to adult, I can't give you heart disease, can I?
Well, except that you spread it by, you know, association, like social mores.
Social mores is the same as a virus that you have to stand 6 feet away from people. All right, from now on, we'll stand 6 feet away from each other to not spread our social mores around. Does that make you feel better? Huh? 855-839-1210 is our number. I'm not saying that this is the only bad food to eat in the world. I'm just simply saying that if we know that this SARS epidemic comes from a specific or maybe one or two different kinds of animals, and we're eating those animals, and that's probably the reason why this is happening, clearly we have to do something different. I don't think that's that much of a reach. I don't think it makes anybody racist. But unfortunately, when political correctness rears its head, you can't have those conversations. And that's just ridiculous. Because I'm sure Chinese people don't want to get any sicker than anybody else does. Like, why are we assuming that Chinese people are just content with getting sick? so that they can continue their bat eating.
We love our bats.
Yeah, we forget the fact that our people are dying and we're all getting sick. And, you know, we love bats so much, we just can't stop eating them. Can we give the Chinese people some credit that maybe they're just not being told this by their own government? Maybe they just don't know. Yeah. And so instead of the reaction immediately being, how dare you sound mean to Chinese people, why don't you turn around and go, but isn't it kind of the right thing to do to maybe bring it to their attention? Like, hey, our scientists think it might be your bat eating or your weird armory looking thingy eating thing.
Pangolinians.
Thank you. Ooh, so whatever. Maybe don't eat those things and your grandma won't die. Like, I'm sure Chinese people don't want their grandma to die any more than we want our grandma to die, right?
No. Right.
So let's choose to bring this to the table with China versus acting like, oh, no, no, let's compare it to drinking milk, which gives you high cholesterol. Stop it. That is political correct horse crap. Bat dung. Politically correct bat dung. But I don't want no part of that.
But there are a billion people in China. So even if 100,000 do the bat eating, it doesn't represent all Chinese people. They just need to have a campaign of the situation.
I told you my campaign. Hey, China, stop eating freaking bats.
Freaking. Ay, ay,
ay. All right, 855-839-1210. I know we have the Secretary of Defense calling into the show shortly, but before I do that, the president was asked why he keeps calling it the China coronavirus. And again, this is the attempt for people to make it racist. They should not, because we should want to help the Chinese people here. I think we should, and that's the right thing to do. And things to their attention, the more their people will be better off too, right? Cut number two.
Why do you keep calling this the Chinese virus? There are reports of dozens of incidents of bias against Chinese Americans in this country. Your own aide, Secretary Azar, says he does not use this term. He says ethnicity does not cause the virus. Why do you keep using this?
A lot of people comes say from it's China. Racist. It's not racist at all, no, not at all. It comes from China. That's why. Comes from China. I
and
want
no
to be accurate. Yeah, please, John. Please.
Are you
I have a great. I have great love for all of the people from our country. But as you know, China tried to say at one point, maybe they stopped now, that it was caused by American soldiers. That can't happen. It's not going to happen. Not as long as I'm president. It comes from China, John. Please.
It does indeed. But I want to welcome right now to the show the Secretary of Energy of the United States, Secretary Dan Briette. Mr. Secretary, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rich. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. I know you're working incredibly hard right now, so thank you for that. How are you holding up?
I'm holding up great.
Terrific.
I'm holding up great. How are you doing?
You know, I'm homeschooling the kids today, and we're all in separate undisclosed locations, but our spirits are good. We're feeling optimistic that Americans are going to do the right thing and social distance from each other, and this thing will go away in a couple weeks.
Oh, that's great. Well, yeah. We do that quite a bit in my house. We homeschool 9 children, so nothing new
there.
9
children?
Wow,
got any advice for me?
Oh, man, I wish I could. That would take a little longer than we have this morning, though.
You are about to issue an order, Mr. Secretary, which is very, very important for America's energy supply. Talk to us about that, please.
Sure. The president's given us a directive to purchase this oil and put it into what we refer to as the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is a series of caverns down in the Louisiana-Texas area. And the reason we do that is to have this available to us in the event of disruption. And that's what we're seeing today. This is available to us in the case of, man-made disruption, cyber attack, or a natural catastrophe like a hurricane. And while oil prices have come down over the course of the last few weeks, it's a perfect time to buy. So we're going to buy this oil from U.S. producers, and we're going to store it for a while.
Up to 77 million barrels of American-made crude oil. That's fantastic.
That's correct, yes, 77 million barrels. And that's what's left in this huge facility that we have down in the southern part of the country. We actually have room for 713 million barrels, and we have space for about 77 million more barrels to put in there. So that's what we're doing. We're going to issue an order today. We're going to create an auction process, and we're going to solicit U.S. producers only and buy this oil while it's cheap.
Now, By doing so, and I know that you're looking at the small to mid-sized oil producers as part of this executive order that you'll be issuing today, which I think is very, very important as well. This is going to help Americans weather the current situation. What are your thoughts in terms of the idea of gas prices as a result of this. And then, you know, Americans, as we get into the summer months with gas, assuming we're back traveling and everything, how's that going to be impacted?
Sure. Well, I think, over time, gas prices are going to come down. That's typically what we see. So at oil prices at this level, we're going to see some decline in gas prices as well. And, this is a great time because as we head into the summer, as you well know, folks tend to head outdoors, head on vacation, and travel across the country. So we should enjoy the benefit of low prices for some time. And that's obviously going to change here with very soon, once we get past this coronavirus pandemic that we're seeing across the country and across the world. We expect that, this will pass fairly soon. And when it does, Americans will be enjoying cheaper gas prices as well as oil prices.
The United States Secretary of Energy Dan Brouillette joins me right now after the president has directed him to acquire more American-made crude oil. The purpose of this in the strategic reserve, we understand it's for national security, but what does that really mean? And what is the impact in terms of not only America's sort of psyche, but the markets, knowing that we've got this massive reserve?
Sure. Well, the president has said for a number of years now that energy security is directly related to our national security. And, when we produce things here in America, like oil, when we produce natural gas, for instance, we not only create American jobs, we create economic security. And what this strategic petroleum reserve does is it saves up for a rainy day. If you think about it as your household, if you think about it for your own family, we talked about our kids earlier, everyone saves a little bit for a rainy day, and that's exactly what this is. We set it aside in the case of some disruption, be it a coronavirus, an invisible virus that we can't deal with that upsets the economy, upsets the world economy, or be it a supply shock if certain countries around the world decide that they're not going to sell their oil on the market. We have this available to us. So it makes our country stronger. It makes our economy stronger. And what the president has rightly recognized is that while the prices are cheap, it's a perfect time to fill it up. And that's what we're doing today, starting today.
I want to thank you, by the way. You used to come on this show when you were the Deputy Secretary of Energy. And now that you're the Secretary, you still come on the show. And that means a lot. I really appreciate that. I just want you to know that.
No, you kind of say that. I enjoy it. I enjoy it a lot. As we talked in the past, we've got some family up in your part of the woods. And, we enjoy being on your show. It's great.
And go Terps, right?
Go Terps. That's right.
If we ever get basketball, college hoops going again, anyway.
That is so true. That is so true.
Mr. Secretary, thank you. Secretary Dan Brouillette, Secretary of the United States Department of Energy. Appreciate your time today, sir. Have a great day. And, keep your chin up and God bless.
Thank you, Rich. Take care. Have a good one.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
All right, 855-839-1210, our number. So how are things impacting you? We're going to talk to a local business owner a little bit as well and how they're doing and get your sense of how things are going. I do want to mention, though, as we're looking at some various local stories as well, I got a text the other day from my buddy, Captain John Hoyt from the Philadelphia Police Department. I wanted to share this with you because obviously, virus or no virus, our police officers always risk their lives. As you know, James O'Connor IV was gunned down in Philadelphia. He has been posthumously promoted to sergeant. So he is now Sergeant James O'Connor IV. And this is really neat because his handcuffs were used to arrest his alleged killer, which I think is just very, very nice that they, were able to do that and to promote him posthumously. But he has a family, obviously, and you could help. Now, normally we would do an event. Normally we would get together and do an event, and the FOP is amazing at doing that stuff. But in light of the coronavirus, what we're asking people to do is to make a donation directly to his family via the Philadelphia Police and Fire Federal Credit Union, which is on 901 Arch Street in Philadelphia, or at any Philadelphia Police and Fire Federal Credit Union branch. You can make out the checks to the James R. O'Connor IV Memorial Fund. Of course, again, just a reminder, he's a SWAT officer. They were serving a warrant, and he was fatally shot. Posthumously promoted to the rank of sergeant. And again, normally we would do something together, in person, and we would do that. Which would be great. But in light of this, if you would just be kind enough to make a donation to help his family out, Sergeant James R. O'Connor IV. And again, you can send that to the Philadelphia Police and Fire Federal Credit Union. And just you can also Google that as well. If you would be kind enough to do that, we would appreciate it. And, you know, best to his family. Absolutely. 855-839-1210 is the number. 855-839-1210. Today, I will be trying to homeschool the kids. I can tell you, I've heard from a number of you that you're kind of going insane a little bit as you're kind of losing your mind. And I get it. I do. I understand that. I've got a great tip to help you get through it, which I'll share with you in just a matter of moments. This is going to be a game changer for you.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Stay tuned for that. Really?
Game changer. Absolutely.
Nice.
But first, let me go to, let's see here. I have a cut. How is it now? Where's my sheet? There we go.
You're right there?
Yeah, no. I just realized now that I have a lesser Cuomo cut, but I have his brother, and I'm just trying to think of the contrast between these two. So here's Andrew Cuomo with his leadership. I mean, I got to say, the guy, for the most part, is stepping up here.
He's been all over TV, by the way. He was just on the Today Show this morning, too.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah.
So here's the governor of New York talking about the president and dispatching this hospital ship, which is very, very important for everybody. Cut number 9.
The president I spoke to this morning, he's going to be making arrangements to send up this hospital ship, which is called the U.S. Comfort. It has about 1,000 rooms on it. It has operating rooms. And the president is going to dispatch the Comfort to us. It will be in New York City Harbor. This will be, it's an extraordinary step, obviously, but it will, it's literally a floating hospital, which will add capacity. And the president said that he would dispatch that immediately. The president also spoke about the mobile hospitals that the federal government has and where we could set up mobile hospitals, where they come in with a mobile hospital that has a capacity of 200 people, 250 people. I told the president that we would do everything we need to do to expedite siting of those facilities. And we're talking about a couple of locations now. But that is also specific and concrete help and something that we can get done within the 45 days.
Now, that is the governor talking about how the president is directly helping him, the people of his state, and how important that is.
Yeah.
Now, here's his idiot lesser brother scolding the president.
Oh, no.
On how dare he call it the Chinese virus. Ladies and gentlemen, the lesser Cuomo, Chris Cuomo.
Calling it the Chinese virus or the Wuhan virus or the Kung flu. Listen, you may think it's clever, but it's hurting. The idea, well, did come from China. Then why doesn't Fauci and other top health officials, why don't they call it that? You know why? Because it could have come from anywhere. All right? Attacks against the Asian community are on the rise. It's not about where it's
No, they're not. There's no attacks against the Asian community on the rise. They're just making that up. It was out there beating up Asian people. That is a complete lie. Second of all, he goes, it could have come from anywhere. But it didn't. Now, did it, Chris?
It's not about
No, it didn't.
It's not about where it started, all right? This doesn't help. Calling it a foreign virus. We're all in the fight together. Stop it.
Why? We need to know where it started so we can make sure it doesn't ever happen again.
Stop
I don't
it.
Understand this.
Stop it.
I don't get it. We got to figure out where it started, how it started, and why so it doesn't ever happen again. Look, I'm Italian. I can tell you that if this virus were started in some cheese shop in Tuscany, I'd want to call it the Italian virus so we don't let it happen ever again.
Yes.
That's not racist. We were on a cheese farm back in when I did the listener trip a couple of years ago, and you know they're all making cheese, you know, with their hands, and they're touching the sheeps and whatnot. If that caused a respiratory virus that was going to become a global pandemic, I would want to say like, "Scusi, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not going to make a cheese anymore." Like, it's not that hard. Oh, this is so frustrating. Asian Americans are getting beat up left and right. Has there been one report of an Asian person in this country getting beat up over this virus? Have I missed this?
I haven't seen any. And you know that will be front page news.
Right. First of all, you got to stand 6 feet away from somebody when you beat them up. So all fake hate crimes have to be 6 feet away now. All right. All hate crime hoaxes have to be 6 feet away from the other person. Got it? Okay, good. Very, very good. I think it's very important as well. But this is what's happening right now. Richard Engel of NBC accusing the president of scapegoating against an entire ethnic group. Let's understand, China is a country where the president's not going after Asian Americans. He's not even going after Chinese Americans, for God's sake. He's going after China, the country of China. That's a difference. It's like the Soviet Union with Chernobyl. This is a difference. It's not the same thing. Cut 7B.
It is easy to scapegoat people, and that is what has always happened when there have been pandemics or epidemics, that foreigners are attacked, foreigners sometimes physically attacked. If you look at what happened during the Middle Ages, there was lots and lots of scapegoating against an ethnic group or a religious group whenever there were pandemics that affected the society and frightened a lot of people. And China certainly feels that is what is happening now with people calling it the Wuhan flu or the Wuhan virus or the China virus. This is a virus that came from the territory of China, but came from bats. This is a bat virus, not a China virus. It doesn't speak Chinese. It doesn't target Chinese people. It targets human beings who happen to touch their eyes, nose, or mouth.
And it started by people eating bats in China. So why don't we just focus on that for a second? The other reason why, by the way, you want to call it the Chinese virus is because we have to focus on the Chinese government and the decisions that the Chinese government made. Jim Garrity over at National Review, we are in this crisis because of the decisions of the Chinese government. As a country, we've got our hands full right now, but while we're sitting in various forms of self-quarantine, we and a lot of other people around the world will have a lot of time to read about the Chinese government destroying samples and suppressing information about the coronavirus in December. Chinese laboratories identified a mystery virus as a highly infectious new pathogen by late December last year, but they were ordered to stop tests, destroy samples, and suppress the news. A regional health official in Wuhan, center of the outbreak, demanded the destruction of the lab samples that established the cause of unexplained viral pneumonia on January 1st. China did not acknowledge there was human-to-human transmission until more than 3 weeks later. The detailed revelations by a respected independent publication provide the clearest evidence yet of the scale of the cover-up in the crucial early weeks when the opportunity was lost to control the outbreak, and the Chinese government's attempt to silence doctors, warning others about the disease as well. Quote, as word of a mysterious virus mounted, Li Wenliang shared suspicions in a private chat with his fellow medical school graduates. The doctor said that 7 people seemed to have contracted SARS. The respiratory illness had spread from China to more than 24 countries and left hundreds dead in the early 2000s. One patient was quarantined at his hospital in Wuhan, China. He urged people to be careful. Li and 7 other doctors were quickly summoned by Chinese authorities for propagating rumors about SARS-like cases in the area, but their warnings were prescient. Soon, health officials worldwide would be scrambling to combat a novel virus with a striking genetic resemblance to SARS. And the Chinese authorities spent the entire month of January denying it could spread between humans, something doctors had known was happening since late December. They went ahead with a Chinese Lunar New Year banquet involving tens of thousands of families in Wuhan. Doctors say that in Wuhan, people who had no connection to that market were among the first showing the symptoms, suggesting that from the beginning, Chinese authorities should have understood that human-to-human transmission was already happening. Even by the Chinese government's own account of the events, President Xi Jinping knew about the disease for 2 weeks before making any public comments about it. Under fire for its response to the coronavirus epidemic, China's authoritarian government appears to be pushing a new account of events that presents President Xi as taking early action to fight the outbreak that has convulsed the country. But in doing so, the authorities have acknowledged for the first time that the president was aware of the epidemic and involved in the response nearly 2 weeks before he first publicly spoke about it. And while officials at the epicenter in the city of Wuhan were still playing down its dangers, the Wall Street Journal calculates that the Chinese government let some 5 million people leave Wuhan without screening. Chinese medical authorities were much more concerned about preserving Wuhan's reputation than the contagious, deadly disease. The other reason why we want to call it the Chinese virus, Chinese coronavirus or Wuhan virus, is because much like Chernobyl with the nuclear meltdown, this government did everything it possibly could to cover up the truth. And you know what? The Chinese people, my question is, do we care about them or not? Do we care about them? Yes or no? I care about them as I care about all people in the world. So do we want to address the fact that their government let so many of them get sick and die or not? Do we want to just cover that up? I'm asking an honest question to my friends on the left. Do you want to just cover that up or what? Because if this had been any other country in the world who propagated this kind of cover up, which led to people dying, I think we'd be talking about it, right? I would hope we would. You could almost say it's a form of ethnic cleansing or genocide of its own people or something like that. Should we not discuss that? Do we not care about the Chinese people that much because we care about their government so much that we're afraid to bring the truth to the world stage? Is that what it is? Because I would think, as a world community, if we cared about Chinese people who have no voice for themselves, by the way, you know, the woman in Wuhan, the elderly woman with her family and her kids, there's no advocate for her. She doesn't have an advocate. There's no newspaper that can advocate for her. There's no radio show that can advocate for her. So are we going to advocate for them or not, is my question. And if the politically correct crowd gets their way and we can't call it the Chinese virus because that's somehow racist, then this whole thing's going to be covered up in history. This entire thing's going to be covered up. I'm not talking about the bat issue per se. I'm talking about then when this happened, knowing that the government did everything it could to cover this up and not help its own people. The hospital's leadership in China banned staff from discussing the disease in public or text messages or images. 8 days later, a nurse in her department started to feel sick, and it was later confirmed that she was, in fact, infected by the coronavirus. By early March, three doctors at the hospital had died from the infection. Even today, prominent Chinese citizens who criticized the government's response suddenly disappear. The Chinese government is much more effective at stopping the spread of information about the coronavirus and stopping the spread of the virus. We are in this mess in large part because of the decisions of the Chinese government. And once it's safe to come out, we're going to face some extremely consequential decisions about how we choose to treat the Chinese government after their catastrophic secrecy, cover-ups, blundering, and disregard for human life around the globe. Or not. We'll just say it could come from anywhere. Freaking idiot. I mean, if the Italians did this, would we not be trying to bring Italy to...
Absolutely.
Right?
We'd be going to war with Italy.
Oh, my God.
I'm joking, of course.
Could have been anywhere. Could have come from anywhere. Yeah, but it didn't. Yeah, sorry.
Would you like to hear from Whoopi? Whoopi also talked about it. Well.
Sure.
I was uncomfortable, and I remain uncomfortable, Whoopi, when they're saying, you know, this is the Chinese virus. This is the Wuhan virus. I don't think this is time to do that. I think when the swine flu in 1998 originated here in the United States, we didn't hear people saying this is the American swine flu. But then again, if it is true that China is saying that the American military gave it to the Chinese, then our president is someone that is a counterpuncher, and we know that. And so this was to be expected. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, people, as we've seen, people start punching people, Asian folks, out.
Yes.
They, you know, will attack. So we need to stop calling it or labeling it like it's they did it to us. Mother Nature really did this to us.
The problem is in December, there were a bunch of Chinese doctors that were sounding the alarm on this virus, and the Chinese government, or, you know, lack of the government, was trying to suppress them, and they were trying to give out warnings. I actually have a friend whose brother was in China, and the lack of information, they don't have access to social media. I agree with you that I think if the left wants to focus on PC labeling this virus, it is a great way to get Trump reelected. I don't have a problem with people calling it whatever they want. It's a deadly virus that did originate in Wuhan.
Let's get the truth out to the world, and we owe it to the Chinese people because they have no one to advocate on their behalf. And if this happens again, China will do the exact same thing, and their people will die. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210.
Can I say something?
You sure can.
I just Googled it because I believe the swine flu started in central Mexico. I don't think it started here. It started from a pig in central Mexico, according to the internet, in 2009.
Ah,
so
the internet.
I just wanted to get
that
out
there. You wanted to fact check the idiots on The View?
Well, because they said it started in America. Like, I know it was a U.S. problem, but according to Science Daily, it originated in pigs from a very small region in central Mexico.
There you go.
So,
well, listen, we don't want to eat those pigs.
Well, I mean, that's, you know.
You love pigs.
No, I love, yes, I don't eat pigs. I love pigs. I think pigs
are very smart.
Yes.
Not smart enough to not get eaten, though. That's the thing. They're almost like they're smart.
I mean, do you have to really?
I'm just making that point.
Come on.
So to the Zealies, you know, while you're homeschooling the Zealy kids, you can say, yeah, don't eat Wilbur, Curious George, or Ricky Tikki Tavi. That's what we learned today on the Zealy Show.
That's what we learned today. Ready? That's news you can use, Dawn. Here's some other news you can use. Ready?
Yes.
Marvel has introduced its new Warriors, the new Warriors lineup, which includes, ready? Non-binary and obese characters, two of which are named Safe Space and Snowflake.
Are you kidding?
I hope I am. This is from the Daily Caller. I hope this is fake news. Snowflake is non-binary and goes by they, them, and has the power to generate individual crystallized snowflake-shaped shurikens. Snowflake and Safe Space are twins. Apparently like this. It was a video of this. It was a video released, and it was created by writers for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. So we need to find out if this is actually true or if this is just a joke or something like that. But it certainly seems to be true. Snowflake and Safe Space, the new Marvel characters. I have a hard time believing this is true, though. I can't believe Marvel would be that woke. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it does seem to be. I see what the article I see is from The Blaze, so I do see it, but I don't know if it's like a joke. Let me.
I'm Captain Safe Space. Everybody, get to your safe spaces now. This virus could have come from anywhere. Yeah, but it didn't. 855-839-1210 is our number. 855-839-1210. All right. So, Greg, we don't have that guest coming up then, right?
We're going to tape with him after the show today.
All right. So we'll do Dawn's news. We'll go 8:30. We'll get an update from Dawn and everything that's going. It's on Marvel.com. Really, Bill? It's on Marvel.com?
Wait. Sorry. Let me put Bill up.
I just found it on Marvel.com.
So wait. This is real then?
It appears real. I mean, you can't get much realer than Marvel.com with Marvel superheroes, right?
I'm Captain Snowflake. So what does it say on the Marvel website?
So it just lists a whole bunch, like you just alluded to, Captain Snowflake, Safe Space. There's one that's Captain Screen Time or just Screen Time. B negative. I don't know what. Oh, B. I mean, I guess it's a play on words. It looks like a vampire.
So this is, I have audio of one of the creators of this, I believe. I'm going to ride the dump button, but I'm going to play this here. Hang on.
Snowflake and Safe Space are the twins, and their names are very similar to Screen Time. It's this idea that these are terms that get thrown around on the internet that they don't see as derogatory, to take those words and kind of wear them as badges of honor. Safe Space is kind of a big, burly, sort of stereotypical jock. He can create force fields, but he can only trigger them if he's protecting somebody else. Snowflake is non-binary and goes by they, them. Snowflake has the power to generate individual crystallized snowflake-shaped shurikens. The connotations of the word snowflake in our culture right now are something fragile. And this is a character who is turning it into something sharp. Snowflake is the person who has the more offensive power, and Safe Space is the person who has the more defensive power. The idea was that they would mirror each other and complement each other.
Wow.
I thought offensive was going to mean like he was going to be insulting.
Safe Space and Snowflake, the new Wonder Twins. Wonder Twin powers activate, form of political correctness. Safe Space and Snowflake.
Yeah, no, this is not a joke. This is actually, wow. Oh my
this
God.
This is the new phase of Marvel, woke Marvel.
Yeah, when does this get incorporated into Kevin Feige's, the creator of all the last 27 films or whatever.
It doesn't, because that's done. Now, Captain America, go from Captain America to Captain Snowflake. That's where we go with the Avengers.
Oh my God.
Captain America to Captain Snowflake, or Safe Space, who identifies as they, them. I'm they, them, Snowflake, and I'm here to save the day.
We need Tony.
But first, you will call me by my proper pronouns, they, them. Then I will save the city. Hey, he's coming to help us. Excuse me? It's they, them.
I'm not
Captain
doing this.
Snowflake, you're here to help us. We're so glad he has come to help. Excuse me? Citizens, first you will refer to me as they, them. Then I will save you, save the day. Okay. We're freaking doomed. Hi, I'm Captain Safe Space. I'm going to put you all in my imaginary safe space. That'll save the day. Oh, yes. All right, Bill, these are your people. These are the millennials.
I don't want to. I mean, I guess it's my fault. Yeah.
It's your fault.
I know.
These are your people.
This is what your generation has done to us, Bill.
Spreading corona and creating these Marvel superheroes. Oh, boy.
Thank God, citizens of Metropolis, we're saved. He has arrived, our savior, Captain Snowflake. Excuse me. I go by they, them. You call me they, them, and then I'll save the day. Until then, Thanos can do whatever he's going to do.
So stupid. This is, I'm like...
I guess that'll be part of the lesson plans today, all right? You know what? I'd like Bernie Sanders to weigh in on this, please.
Oh.
If Bernie could weigh in on this, that'd be very, very helpful to all of us. In the middle, as we're talking about bats and we're talking about woke Marvel superheroes.
Sir, what are you saying to your supporters? There have been all this flurry today. Can you say,
well, do
you...
some of what we said is just untrue. We sent out a statement.
What's
your time frame?
Stop with this. I'm dealing with a global crisis. You know, we're dealing with it, and you're asking me these questions, right?
You're running for president.
Listen, so who do I look like, Captain Snowflake? I'm busy. I'm busy going to the bat barbecue later. I don't have time for this.
Stop with this. I'm dealing with a global crisis.
Drop the F-bomb. Bernie, drop the F-bomb.
And then this is global instead of global crisis.
Right.
Look, it's me, Captain Safe Space, and I got to go deal with this, so get out of my flipping way, will ya?
Stop with this. I'm dealing with a global crisis. You know, we're dealing with it, and you're asking me these questions, right?
Bernie ready for president.
He's doing this by himself, that nobody's helping him with this crisis, that it's all on Bernie?
Marvel.
Yeah, did Marvel tell him that?
Superhero.
Bernie. You're the new superhero Sanders. You're the whole operation. Did President Trump appoint Bernie Sanders as the czar of the coronavirus response? That Bernie is out there now, the one and only guy dealing with this entire crisis. Did I miss that? Was that in Dawn's news earlier? Did you report on that, Dawn? I think I must have missed it.
I did not.
I'm dealing with a blanking crisis, you blanking blankers.
So nasty.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard Bernie drop the F-bomb before. Have you?
No. I mean, you know, we've heard the cocaine and everything else. We've never heard the F-bomb
it's
come
the first.
Out of his, yeah.
So what do you think, Dawn? Is it the fact that Bernie is really upset about how much this weight of the world is on his shoulders, or the fact that he knows he's not going to be the Democrat nominee for president?
Door number two, yes. Bob.
Man, he's assessing his campaign, right?
Yes. That's what he came out and said.
That's what he said, but he's very, very busy saving the world, Dawn.
Yeah, I think it's over.
He's saving the world.
Stop with this. I'm dealing with a... global crisis. You know, we're dealing with it, and you're asking me these questions, right?
You're running for president, so...
Well, right now, I'm running... Right now, I'm trying to do my best to make sure that we don't have an economic meltdown and that people don't die. Is that enough for you to keep me busy for tonight?
All right. Okay, got it, Blondie. Got it. Jeez. Good.
She definitely is not a young socialist, Hottie, right? Am I right?
Nope.
Yeah, you know what? Listen, here's the deal. You ask dumb questions, I'll go save mankind, humankind, personkind, whatever the hell I'm supposed to say.
How does Megaphone Bernie sound in the underground bunker, by the way?
He sounds great.
Does he? Oh, good.
Yeah, we need to get you your megaphone, though, but I guess we're probably not going to do that.
Can you send it by courier?
Yeah.
All right, 855-839-1210. We'll check in with Dawn in a minute.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.